Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So Cindy, I was thinking the other day, I was standing and looking out of my kitchen window and looking at all the trees, which are great, and thinking about all the other vistas that could potentially be there out of my kitchen window that I'm not seeing this summer.
Right.
You know, it's like I took a vacation early in the summer that was very nice, but traveling just makes you want to travel more, right?
I agree with that. Wholeheartedly.
Or what if you're stuck? What if you're stuck in a radio studio and you can't travel?
You have to use your imagination.
Like our poor producer, Luke, is not allowed to travel.
Poor Luke.
I don't know that he's not allowed.
We should have taken him with us on our various vacations so he wouldn't be
stranded. That's a great idea
for
some years in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our child.
But I was thinking, like, I was leading a rich fantasy life in the kitchen, as I have. And I was thinking, oh, I really wanted to get to the Dolomites. Why can't I get there also this summer,
I
right?
I would like to get to the Dolomites.
Or I really want to go back to a beach in Sicily. I really wanted to get there this summer.
That would be hot. That would be so hot.
It is hot. I'll tell you what.
Whammy. It's hot enough here, Tony.
It is.
You really
want
to go
hot.
To Sicily?
Yeah.
That's a good place to go in your imagination then.
No, but...
Right now. No, it's an amazing place.
It's not warmer than
place.
Baltimore in the middle
place.
Of the summer.
Well, and the seafood. Oh, my gosh. The seafood
right,
there.
Right, exactly.
Brilliant.
So, you know,
and the tomatoes. Gosh, it would be so great to get the Sicilian little cherry tomatoes on the vine.
So what do I do? I want to make a dinner.
Okay.
I invite neighbors and I say,
we're having a Sicilian dinner.
We're going to go to Sicily.
There you go. That sounds good. What's your wine choice going to be? Let's just start there.
Oh, well, there are a couple, obviously. There's some very, very good Caricante being made these days up on the Mount Etna. And Caricante is one of these ancient grapes that you see in Sicily that are considered relatively indigenous, that all came out of the Tigris and Euphrates. It's about 3,000 years it's been growing there. Not the vine itself, the vines themselves, but the grape varietal. So it's very adapted to the place.
Mm-hmm.
So when produced well, it does very, very well. But maybe Caricante to start, and maybe just a nice seafood crudo. You know, just brilliant seafood, raw, maybe tuna, making me think of, you know, like bluefin tuna out of the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. That sort of a thing. And we're getting our very first chilies in another week or two. So, but I also have some like pickled Calabrian chilies I put up. But literally just those two things and a nice fat slice of peach.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that sounds good. Peaches are so good right now.
So I would take a very thin lemon slice, a nice sweet one, and a thin peach slice and a big fat basil leaf. Because they're great right now, the ones that have been ripening in the sun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take those guys and a little bit of sea salt, brush sea salt and olive oil on the piece of tuna cut like sashimi, and wrap that in those leaves, and have just a little bit of the pickled chili on the plate. And have that in a nice, rich, cold glass of Caricante.
That sounds good.
As a place to start.
You know, this morning I got a call from Elena Bassignani, and she said, Chef, we've got a whole bunch of squash blossoms. I'm coming. I was there in like 8 minutes from my house. Gave me 3 bags of squash blossoms. And while I was up there, I had to, you know, sort of be nosy and look at their garden, which is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They have such a big garden. And I'm like, okay.
Well, if you have a bunch of vineyards, it seems pretty reasonable that you would have a pretty darn good kitchen garden, right?
Oh, yeah. And he has, and you were just talking about peppers, and I believe he had jalapenos, but I'm not exactly sure. I didn't look at them that closely, but he had a bunch of beautiful peppers hanging on the vine there, so on the plant. But their garden is amazing, and they produce so many squash blossoms. I cannot wait to cook those tonight. They're so pretty, and they just smelled so good. And I was going to stuff them, but I mean, I swear, I think I have like 100, so I'll give some to, you know, guy across the street.
Sounds like a pretty nice amuse bouche.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, you know what? I think this is going to be a light batter and just fried and a little fresh basil mayonnaise and call it a day. They don't need to be stuffed. When you have that many, just enjoy the blossoms.
Yeah, thinking of zucchini flowers makes me think of zucchini flowers up around Lake Como in the middle of summer. You know, that's a great place to go on vacation.
And
you
get such a beautiful
place. Just you can look up menus. You can think about dishes from those places. You can serve wines from those places. You know,
right,
that's
right.
I think the second part of my Sicilian meal that I would do just while I was fantasizing, I would serve either grilled fish. Well, I think you're, I guess you're obliged to serve pasta, and even just a small pasta. Those zucchini flowers can be awfully good with very simple spaghetti and not an egg spaghetti, you know, the dough from the south and the one that you make in the morning, hang it dry. You know, you even just make trofie, is a fun little shape. But that with lots of zucchini flowers and a little bit of the fresh garlic that's just come, and some of the cherry tomatoes that are around right now, that would be great.
Nice acid.
For a very simple, you know, very, very simple vegetable pasta.
I love fresh garlic.
And then give me a nice dorado or an orrata to grill. Orrata with oil-cured black olives as a garnish, and more lemon and marjoram. But just grill that whole fish, and that's in a heartbeat. And frappato, you're asking about the, what wine to serve. Frappato is one of these things. It's, there's a famous wine from the south of Sicily called Cerasuolo di Vittoria. Vittoria is one of the ports that faces Africa. And Cerasuolo is usually 60% Nero d'Avola, which is literally like black wine when it's fermented and it, if it's lower yield. And frappato is, imagine if strawberry juice could make you very drunk, you know, okay? Take these two wines,
I'd like,
you know, something
that's
like more
that.
Serious than Zinfandel, and it's, and blend them together, 60-40, the black wine to the strawberry juice, right? The Nero d'Avola to the frappato. And that's Cerasuolo di Vittoria. And Cerasuolo is probably too much to serve for that fish, unless it's a really big, mature orata. But the frappato, a little bit cold, is really brilliant for that kind of thing.
You were talking about the tuna, and it just made me think of a tureen I used to make. And I, at this point, cannot remember who inspired it, but it was a tureen that I, you know, it's just all raw fish product with heirloom tomatoes and fresh basil.
I think that was the, based on a Raja Verge thing from the south of France.
Okay, yeah.
I know Provence is where you want to go on the vacation in your
Provence
mind.
Provence is my...
Or you're inspired by the vacation that you took.
Exactly, exactly. But that tureen was so good, and obviously it has to be eaten that day. But you put the, you know, really obviously sushi-grade quality tuna, and I we're using Big Eye right now, and it's really beautiful. But thin slices of the... The tomatoes starting on the bottom. Actually, you should probably put the basil leaves first. So big basil leaves, then slices of tomato. And you want to salt and pepper it, but you want to be light with it because obviously it's going to draw out the moisture in the tomato. And then the next layer is tuna. And then just keep going up to the top of the tureen. And you do need to weigh it down so that it is sliceable. So I usually just take a piece of cardboard, wrap it in foil, and put it on top of the mold and then the tureen mold.
Just gently press it.
And gently press it. I have found that there are some tomato containers that are the perfect size to just weigh it down. So, and it's a good weight. It's not too heavy. But and then just turn it out. And after it's set for a couple of hours, turn it out and just slice it. And I used to serve that with a goat cheese vinaigrette that was pureed goat cheese with a little bit of corn oil and extra virgin olive oil and sherry vinaigrette and salt and pepper, and serve it with frisé. And the combination of all of those flavors were so good.
So, but that dish is a Provençal dish that is maybe you're remembering because you were on vacation there. What's the vacation you didn't take? You know, what's the place that you wish you were on vacation that maybe you'll invite people to, because you want to make a few dishes from a particular place? So where would you want to go? You can't get to?
I can't get to Asturias in the northern part of Spain. So I would really like to go back there someday.
Ooh,
but,
my favorite blue cheese, Asturias, La Peral.
Oh, so good. And those beans are just the dish that we had. We had lunch that day with the winemaker. Or no, it was a wine importer probably. And we sat at the chef's table in the kitchen and had, 14 courses or something.
Are you talking about that crazy lunch?
Yeah, that was amazing.
With a glass door into the kitchen?
Exactly. Yes.
So what dishes would you do?
I would like to make their traditional bean dish, which was tomatoes and the very large white bean, and it had, you know, it had garlic and olive oil and all kinds of goodness in there and fresh herbs. And we had that lunch was so interesting because we had so many modern courses because of course that was at the height of molecular cooking when we were there, and the influences were strong. And then he prepared a couple of very traditional old dishes from that region, and one of them was that bean dish. And I came back and immediately made it. So, and I had spent a long time since I made that, so I would make that for sure.
Would you pair it with some of the science projects from that meal?
There would be an entire Spanish dinner. So I would definitely have start with a barraco ham and then move to some sort of amazing. Probably cuttlefish, because that was the first time I had cuttlefish.
Octopus and cuttlefish you can get plenty of in Asturias.
Right, and that was so amazing. So I would just do a very simple dish with that, with preserved lemon and good extra virgin olive oil, and just have brilliant cuttlefish, and then have the bean dish, and then probably have some sort of lamb dish. Which I don't know that is necessarily traditional to there, but certainly something.
You get big octopus off that coast, and you get great, great big lobsters, fantastic Atlantic lobsters from off that coast.
Well, and I've got a lobster dish on my mind right now because we're getting the beautiful peaches and stone fruits are really strong right now. And I really, really kind of want to do that. It's a lobster dish where it's butter poached lobster with a vinaigrette of heavily reduced fresh lime juice, lemon juice, and orange juice. With a little bit of butter poached garlic and shallot, and then the local fruit on the plate, and tender lettuces. You definitely want sweet lettuces, like butter lettuce, and fresh tarragon, and a little bit of chervil. And that would be, especially probably prior to the bean dish. Actually, I'd probably just do the beans with the lamb, and then have the lobster course before that, and have the cuttlefish before that, and obviously start off with either Serrano or Barraco ham. Thinly sliced.
Yeah, those are sort of two different paths.
Oh, yeah. Where else would you like to go in your home vacation?
It's funny. A place I've never been that I desperately, it's in my brain now, and I keep looking up what the traditional food is Patagonia. Mm. And they just get different fish down there, and there's a ton of game. And that's where a lot of, there's so much European immigration into Argentina. A lot of the Swiss and the Germans went down south. Even some English went down south. A lot of the French and the Italians and Spaniards went to Buenos Aires and then into the rest of the country. But Patagonia is on the brain. So, and the way that they cook with fire is super interesting to me. I like fire and sources of fire and like big iron for heat and all this kind of stuff. So that methodology, there's a way that they cook vegetables down there, in particular butternut squash, that they brush with vinegar and garlic and honey, and then just roast in the embers from the fire, mm-hmm. and then have that the next day. They go ahead and pull that out, and then with olive oil, almost like a mash kind of thing that they warm back up. And Parmigiano. Sounds just fantastic to me. A lot of the game down there, they have so many different game birds down there, and then goat, of course, that's something. It's now, I think that's all over Argentina, but down there there's some different specialties with what they do, and there's a lot more diversity of fruit in Patagonia than in the rest of Argentina. So you see a lot of, instead of just being roasted simply, you see a lot of different fruit preserves. And sometimes like unusual stuff, spicy fruit preserves and whatnot, being served with roasted goat or the pulled meat, and it's like simply fired breads and that kind of thing. So that's in my brain. I would like to do a meal in that range, where maybe you started with one of the ceviches that they produce down there from, and oysters also. Like I've never had an oyster from down there, but I know they have. I don't want to eat a penguin, but I also want to see penguins like in a natural habitat. And there are penguins down there. So
that's pretty great.
So especially when it's like 98 degrees outside and, you're looking out into the green world you can't go into because it's too hot.
Right.
Thinking about cooking from like cool forests and waters and oysters out of cool waters and the prospect of going for a hike and seeing penguins, having that on my brain while I'm making a meal for friends would be really interesting. And there's also actually like nice Pinot Noir from down there. There are Malbecs and there's Bonarda and some of the other grapes that you see in Argentina. But there's decent Pinot Noir and Pinot Blanc and some of the cooler climate varietals. It's not all like hot beach in Sicily in my brain in the summertime. I like cooler holiday idea.
Absolutely.
In fact, when we come back, we'll have Wolfgang Rafer from Coltorenzio Winery in the Alto Adige, up in the Dolomites, a favorite place for both of us, and a brilliant producer of wines, and a young guy that can talk to us about the place and the dishes and the wine and the traditions there. And maybe our listeners can plan a vacation, which would be nice. If not, just have some fun with the ideas. All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have with us, as promised, Wolfgang Rafer from Coltorenzio in the Alto Adige in the north of Italy. Wolfgang, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Hello to all the listeners.
And I remember when you were working with your dad and then were the chief winemaker for Coltorenzio, but now you're the managing director. You're the big boss now.
In fact, I'm the big boss with all the responsibility.
Yeah, it's a testament to the quality orientation of Coltorenzio that, you know, you went through and learned all the details, and then you finally can be in charge of things. How is summer in the Dolomites?
The summer in the Dolomites this year is, of course, we have quite a nice climate as always in summer, but we have to fight with a little bit of rain, especially in the vineyard. So rain, as you know, is sometimes a problem with Peronospora and the Iridium, and we are fighting, but we are quite positive for the vintage 2016.
Our program, our theme was the summer vacations we had taken. The first thing coming to my mind was visiting the Dolomites, because I love it and I love the cooking, and I know that Cindy's super fond of it as well.
Absolutely, beautiful region.
Maybe tell listeners about where in Italy you are, what are some of the basic things that they should know about the Alto Adige and its history, and maybe what wine growing is like there.
Alto Adige is one of the northest regions in Italy, and we're in the middle of high mountains. These high mountains are called the Alps, and are very important for the scenery you see, but as well as for the soil, for the climate we're having here. Alto Adige maybe is not the first place you go to visit once you go to Italy. Of course, Italy, you have the big cities, the historical cities. But the second or third time, you should for sure come to visit us, because you see a melting pot about the Mediterranean climate, alpine climate, and also the culture, because we're on the border between, let's say, the Italian culture and the German-speaking culture. So it's a really fusion that you should see. And you can see that in the food, you can see that in the lifestyle, and of course you have the taste of the terroir also in the wine.
And so in the Alto Adige, what do you think are the most important dishes that people would look for?
I think the mostly typical dishes, starting with the vegetables we are growing here, and after going through the pasta dishes. We have some special pasta dishes that are like ravioli. We call Schlutzkrapfen. It's a German expression and means mezzalune, filled up with spinach, that's it. And on the other side, we have Knödel. Yes. Knödel is a mix of old bread, vegetables, onion, a little bit of milk that are put together. They look like a snowball. And you cook them, and you can put different things in, from spinach to cheese and so on. That's two dishes you have to taste once you're here. And maybe you can start with some spit, which is a dried smoked ham. In Italy, we have different, in every part of Italy you go, there's different kind of insaccati that are very well made. Prosciutto crudo, you know for sure. It's the prosciutto crudo from San Daniele or from Parma. which is only air dried. A steak is we have some, we put some spice on, we dry it air, but before we dry it, we smoke it. So that's something you have to taste for sure. And then of course venison, game, the grown cows here, all is really very good and genius.
Yeah, I've had great cheese and yogurt and all the dairy from the Alto Adige is fantastic.
And of course, you can mix this in a beautiful way with the wine we have here.
So maybe tell us. So what are the varietals that people would know that they see there, that they would see in the Alto Adige, and what are the varietals that they may not know that they should know about from the Alto Adige?
So Alto Adige, in the past, was more red wine producing country, but in the last 30 things a lot happened, and we became a white wine producer because, of course, we are the northern wine growing region in Italy. So we have some local grapes and some, let's say, international grapes that are much more known. International grapes, probably your people know or should know, is for sure the Pinot Grigio. Pinot Grigio, we do a very good job with the Pinot Grigio here, as well as Ricciardone and Sauvignon, for sure people know. But then we have varieties like Pinot Bianco, like Gewürztraminer. Then we have in some little parts also some Silvaner, some Kerner. Varieties that maybe are not so well known, but they show the variety we have in Alto Adige. Variety in climate, in soil types, but of course also in varieties of grapes.
In midsummer in Baltimore, it's unbelievably hot and humid. That's Silvaner and Kerner, two things I always want to drink in the midsummer here because it's so refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, beautiful wines for this time are for sure Alto Adige wines because we're able to combine the richness of a Mediterranean climate with the freshness of the Alpine climate. So you always will have a very clean, nice, fresh fruit in the nose, and it goes and fit it in the palate, which makes finally our wine suitable for aperitivo, but great also for to match with the dishes. If I should pick out a variety, for sure I can recommend a beautiful Pinot Bianco, but at the same time I can recommend also a very powerful Sauvignon we produce.
So how about reds?
How about reds? We have two local varieties. I think the most important local variety we have is Lagrein. Lagrein is something very deep colored, something very rich in aromas. It has a smell like pepper, like meat, like chocolate. And then the palate, it's a combination of strong tannins with a good acidity. That's really a rough wine that shows you a strong character. And this, I think, is nice to discover from Italian wines because we have 600 local varieties, and to discover them is beautiful. On the other side, we have the right climate for an international variety, which is doing very well here. It's Pinot Noir. We call it Pinot Nero. And here we are able to go from a very lifestyle wine, so chill it a little bit before you drink it, to some very good and complex Pinot Neros that are great for the Mediterranean cuisine.
Now, historically, I was thinking one of the things that I like best about the region is that the history is very interesting. Historically, it was a red wine growing country through the whole Tirol and the Alto Adige because it was always part of the Habsburg Empire. Correct?
Yes.
There are very few sources for good red wine in a lot of that territory, so it was red. In Italy, there are only so many sources for when the borders change. In Italy, there are only so many sources for fresh whites.
Yep.
So what you guys have planted changes over.
You're correct. You're correct. First of all, because Alto Adige, before World War I, as you said, were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, we are speaking German too, and we have a strong influence from the German culture. But at the same time, we became Italian. And with that situation, we became the northern Italian wine-growing region. And, of course, if you look at Italy in the south, naturally you're thinking more about wine. In the north, you're thinking more about the white wines. And what is very popular in Italy too are the aromatic grapes, and so we focus very strongly on the on our local grape Gewürztraminer, which is a big success in Italy. Maybe not so much in the rest of the world, because our style of Gewürztraminer is not so well known as the Alsace style, which is completely different. So, at the next occasion, you should taste some Gewürztraminer from Alto Adige.
I've always been very fond of the Gewürztraminer from the Alto Adige because the intensity is great and the richness is great, but there is very good acid, and it's not as sweet a style as you see in other places around the world for a Gewürztraminer. But the original home is in the Alto Adige, correct?
The original home is in Alto Adige. We have a small town in the southern part of Alto Adige. It's called Tramin. And Gewürz finally means nothing else than spicy. So it's a spicy Tramina. They call it spicy because if you smell it, the Gewürztraminer, deep into where it grows, okay, deep into the soil and so on, you always find a very elegant spiciness that can move from very intense spice to very, very sweet spice. And that's the reason of the name. And we discovered this variety many, many years ago, and especially for the Italian markets, we have now a variety that everybody loves and gives us a lot of success and allows us also to let the people know the other varieties, the beautiful varieties we produce.
Wolfgang, is there, as I recall, that your vines are trellised, is that right? I just think it's good for people to understand how the farming aspect of your grape work works.
The farming we're doing means maybe we have also to speak a little bit about our structure. So Alto Adige, we have 5,000 hectares. 1 hectare is 2.5 acre. And these 5,000 hectares are managed by 5,000 growers. So we have a big advantage that we have a lot of hands on a really small area. And if you teach them correctly, you can obtain a great quality of grapes, because most of the work is done by hand. And those are the farming, starting from the planting of the vines, starting from the pruning up to the harvest, and also the way how we work is very sustainable, so very close to the nature. Because finally, our job should be to put what you see. If you take a picture of the beautiful Alps, if you take a picture of the nice vineyards here, I always say I want you to squeeze this picture and then put it in the bottle. So you have also on one side to respect the nature, understand the nature, and then you can also get out the maximum from the grapes and produce wines that respect fully the terroir and the philosophy of the winery.
That's wonderful.
I'm going to ask you, Wolfgang, to send me two things so we can get it up on the Formula Wolf webpage. One is a great photograph of the vineyards and the Alps.
That would be great.
And two, a link to your website so that listeners can see more in detail about Cotorenzio and what you guys are doing.
Okay, I will do that. I will do that.
Thank you. Perfect. Wolfgang.
Well, Wolfgang, thanks so much for coming on the program,
yes,
giving people an introduction to the Alto Adige.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you and Cindy for the invitation.
Of course.
And yeah. I hope we see us personally soon.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you and your family as soon as we can figure out how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know where we are.
Oh, yeah. Just a beautiful drive up from Verona, honestly.
And thank you for your great wines. We love working with them. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Ciao. You know, Sin, I think one of the reasons I'm so fond of the Alto Adige is it's just inspiring to see the mountains. And as Wolfgang was talking about, you know, he wants to put the vineyards and the Alps in the bottle.
That was beautiful the way he said that.
But when the wines are good from good producers there, you can taste that for sure.
Well, and the freshness, that cold, right? The
They have cool nights. They have cool nights. That's the whole thing is they're, you know, the mountains are on the north and to the west from where they are. And those valleys, they keep reasonably warm daytime temperatures from the Mediterranean, but they have the cool nights from being in the altitude. The soils are all well drained. See, if they do a responsible job farming, they just get great fruit to play with.
Sure.
You know, and that is what goes in the bottle.
Oh, and they're cooking. Oh, my goodness, the speck that he was talking about. I mean, that's such – I'd never had anything like that. I mean, you can't call that bacon.
No, well, it's a very particular kind of prosciutto. I mean, that's it is a raw ham, you know, just like a Parma or like a San Daniele.
Cured ham.
But I mean, as not cooked, cured.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just beautiful stuff.
That and the canoodle. Oh, my gosh. I mean, memories of eating different canoodle everywhere.
Canoodle with fresh nettles. That's my all-time favorite springtime.
But all the cheeses, all the meats, the canoodle.
All the fresh-made cheeses. I mean, that's...
The pastas that they do serve, which, you know, it's not as
the
prevalent.
The Schlutzkrapfen is great. That stuff, it's not as easy to spell as you think. Schlutzkrapfen. It has a lot more letters.
I never thought that was easy to spell. Oh, my gosh.
And accents we don't always use in English.
Right.
And so many people think, oh, it's Italy. Well, you hear Wolfgang's accent.
But the Austrian.
Well, first off, there's only so many guys named Wolfgang who are Italian, and they're all from this area. The first language of the region is German.
I love his name.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's, I mean, he's amazing.
There's obviously a strong – that was vacation land for the Austrian Empire. They would go there to ski, and they would go there in the summertime, you know, up in – I mean, that's that, – so there's many, like, beautiful lodges. There's just series of castles.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Right on Kulturenzio's label is, like, you know, one of the ubiquitous castles, like, you know, is there's, like, the shadow of it on their labels. It's it just to remind you where they are. I think that's one of the things that he and his dad before him really – they respect where they are, and they celebrate it, and they try to get it across to people.
That's great.
And it may not be entirely intuitive, but once it's in your blood, once it's in your brain, then it works out. And for Midsummer Wines, I love those things. So when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, I'm going to ask Cindy for that menu inspired by her vacation in Provence, and then a little chef challenge.
A little chef challenge.
All of that and more on the Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, it's time to hear what the product of your vacation was. What is your inspiration coming back?
Mm-mm-mm.
Let's say you have people coming to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make a meal. Where did you go?
I was in the Southern Rhone Valley and very close to Châteauneuf-du-Pape in a little town called Rochegude, and also visited a lot of the villages very close by. And went down as far south as Avignon to go to the Papal Palace.
So Provençal, Northern Provençal cuisine, not coastal cuisine.
Right, not coastal. So it's the Vaucluse, basically.
Vaucluse, yeah.
Vaucluse. And one of the things I had that was just absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to try and make it today, was a tart that had girole on it, snail butter. That's how
girole,
the chef...
Girole is sort of like...
Baby chanterelles.
Chanterelles are sort of looked down on other chanterelles.
Yeah, they're little baby chanterelles, basically.
Marvelous mushrooms.
Yeah, they're perfect little yellow, tiny little cute mushrooms. So the tart was made with sablé dough, but he put cheese in it. It was either Parmigiano or Reggiano or whatever, but it was so good. And it was just a circle of dough, so it didn't
sort of
have
like
sides.
Sort of like a savory Parmigiano cookie?
Yes.
With the girole
roasted
on top?
Yeah, butter, eggs, flour, Reggiano, and it barely held. I'm so excited I can't speak. It was so good. It barely held together. And then on top of that were the girole, and then he put more Reggiano or Parmigiano, whatever it was, and then he put snail butter on top. It was so rich. It was so gorgeous.
By snail butter, you mean butter with garlic and parsley?
Right. Well, and Chef called it that. He's like, I use my snail butter. I'm like, okay,
so
Chef.
literally, because it's not, butter that snails made.
No. Yeah. So it's butter, right. Butter with chopped garlic and parsley in it and a little salt and pepper. And
that sounds great. It sounds like you desperately need a bottle of really good Merlot.
Oh, well, I drank red wine with it, but gotcha.
I believe you.
Of course. Well, you know, what can I say? We're in Châteauneuf, so we're near Châteauneuf. But yeah, so Merlot, all right. And he had slices of summer truffle, which this chef is Guy Julien, and the name of the restaurant is La Beaugravière, and it's in Mondragon, which is a very tiny village not too far from Châteauneuf. And he is really an amazing – he's a brilliant chef from the standpoint that his food is very down-to-earth and very – beautiful, but very rustic and very full of flavor and very fresh. We were there for 6 nights and in that region, and friends of mine were staying at La Beaugravière, and so I would go and get them in the morning. And what was very cool about that was, for the first time being there early in the morning, we got to see his farmers come in and bring him food product, which was really very special. And so I watched the chanterelles come in, and we watched the squab come in and from the farm down the street. And it really was – and to see Chef – I mean, this is a man that works unbelievably hard. He's there early in the morning until the last guest leaves that night, and his wife works the same way. And so it's a very special place. And so that course is definitely something that if I was going to recreate my trip, that's the first thing I would serve. And then I've already done one of the other courses I had. I also ate at Paul Bocuse in Lyon, and I had lunch there, and he does a pan-seared foie gras course with a passion fruit reduction sauce. So it's a, you know, I do chicken and veal. I'm not
sharp
sure exactly.
Sharp and sweet and tangy.
Oh, my gosh. And he had gaufret potatoes on top of it, and it was so beautiful. I literally wanted to, and this is a 3-star Michelin restaurant. Paul Bocuse has maintained his 3 Michelin stars consecutively every year since 1965. And Chef is now 90 years old, and he is one of the greatest chefs of our lifetime in this world.
He's had 3 stars my entire life.
That is unbelievable. I mean, he is unbelievable.
And it's a long time.
And Madame Bocuse, oh my gosh, Madame Bocuse came to our table, and I, of course, being me, I burst into tears when she came to the table. And she just was there. I'm like, she's got to be 90 years old too. And here she is standing in front of me, going to every table in the restaurant and saying good afternoon and how are you? And just, oh my gosh, it's just such an inspiration to go there. And their kitchen is beautiful, and to get to see how it operates, you can walk by and look into the kitchen. And I was fortunate enough to go into the kitchen and talk to the executive chef and the sous chef and have my photograph taken with them. And every person in that kitchen stopped working when I went into the kitchen. It's just this show of respect for the guest, or for, I don't know if it was for me as a chef. I don't know if that's how they treat, you know, what they do, but it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. And that lunch was really one that I will remember for the rest of my life. The other dish that I would like to recreate in my home is his whole chicken in the pig's bladder, which, you know, has truffle underneath the skin. It's a beautiful chicken, and is then.
I'm afraid you have to wait for wintertime for this.
I know. So then the next course I would do is, just because we are in summertime, after the tart, and this may seem a little bit vegetable-y, but we just have mushrooms. So I would like to make a zucchini heirloom tomato gratin. And so in a beautiful gratin dish, then layers of fresh zucchini, heirloom tomatoes, salt, pepper, a little bit of garlic, shallot, rosemary, a little bit of thyme, great extra virgin olive oil.
Just slice everything and layer it into the
gratin
dish.
And you can choose to put cheese in or not. You know, I might put Reggiano in, or I might put a little bit of goat cheese, or I might not put any cheese at all. But the juice from the tomato and that great extra virgin olive oil will mingle with all of those herbs and will produce something that can be very brilliant because of the quality and freshness of the product.
How long would you put something like that in the oven?
I would not put it in very long. So at in a 350-degree oven, if it was, let's say, 4 to 5 layers of product, I'd probably only leave it in there 20 to 25 minutes.
So you're literally just getting it warm.
Yes. And once you start to see it bubble, take it out and let it, you know, rest a moment and eat it.
And you're seasoning every slice as you lay it in there.
Exactly. And a little bit of oil in between all the layers as well, but don't overdo it. But that is definitely...
I think I'd want a little breadcrumb and a little Reggiano on top of that guy.
Sure,
that
sure.
That sounds good to me.
That's perfectly beautiful thing to do. And then, since we can't do the chicken, I really would like to do lamb with artichokes. And I think this is partly because it is so Provençal. And also, I'd really like to add Nyon olives to it. Or I would just use Niçoise olives.
I love Nyon olives.
Oh, my gosh. So do I. And
it's strong, but I love strong olives. So.
And we took a day.
And lamb can take it.
We took a day trip to Nyon. And just to actually see the landscape and the low hills and to see all of those beautiful trees and to see the everything else that was growing in those valleys really was it's a beautiful place. And they have a wonderful little village that you can visit, and they do have market day in Nyon, and that's the day you should go there. I think that's, to me, that's really what's important about your trip, is that you base your day trips on what day is market day. So if the market's, you know, on Thursday on Vaison-la-Romaine, then you go to Vaison-la-Romaine that day. Just be aware that you're going to have a hard time parking. But short of that, there's no excuse and no reason not to go on market day. You're going to see beautiful things, and hopefully you can buy some of it. You know, maybe you rented a home for this trip. Or you just, you know, I've taken food back to my hotel room and had a little picnic in my hotel room where it's, you know, cured meats and smoked meats and cheeses. And I pick up a bottle of olive oil, and we get a couple of bottles of wine and some great bread and some pastry. And, you know, those are all things you can have a wonderful time with. And actually, speaking of picnics, on the trip, we went up to Suzette and to Baume de Venise and had a picnic on the way back down from Suzette. That's my Provençal trip and the lamb course with fresh artichokes and Nyon olives. I would very simply dress that with extra virgin olive oil, gently roast the leg or whatever cut of lamb you're doing. Maybe you're going to grill the chops instead. But I kind of feel like I want to roast something with a lot of herbs on it, rosemary, thyme, maybe even a little bit of lavender, perhaps roast the leg or tie it with the herbs and have a little bit of garlic and shallot in the pan too.
The preparation sounds great. It's funny. I want to use a lamb breast or a lamb shoulder to do the same kind of thing, but do a very slow roast.
Sure.
I think would be a fun one. Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking of Argentina still in my head right now, and it's like you could start that in the oven and then finish it in the embers. And
sure.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. All right. You ready for a chef's challenge?
Sure.
We got to do a quick one.
Okay.
I wrote it incredibly neatly.
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of... Okay.
It's a lot of stuff.
Three-quarters of a...
I'm being generous.
Why is it three-quarters of a partridge?
No, it's 3 or 4 partridge. 3/4 of partridge. That took his left wing off.
That's kind of strange. Okay.
Wow. I ate the wing.
Polenta, white corn, sweet red peppers, jalapenos, golden beets, Manchego cheese, dandelion greens, garlic, wax beans... yellow watermelons, yum. Fresh goat's cheese, extra virgin olive oil, blackberries, dairy pantry, and garden at my disposal. Partridge. Roasting that, leaving it on the bone. And have pre-roasted the golden beets. I'm going to add those to the roasting pan with the partridge near the end of the cooking. And actually, I may put the peppers in there, too. Beets and peppers. Interesting. I don't think I've ever put that together before. A little bit of garlic, whole garlic in the cavity of the bird as it's roasting. And I need herbs, so you say I have the garden. So I think with those things going on, which are kind of interesting, I would put just a tiny bit of rosemary inside the bird. Obviously heavy salt and pepper. Yeah. And then just slow cook the polenta with cream and a little bit of salt and pepper. And that is definitely going with that partridge and those vegetables. The cheese, the dandelion greens, definitely with the, I think the corn would be great with it because dandelion greens are bitter. So roast the corn in the husk, cut it off the cob, and toss it in with the greens and the wax beans. And actually, I would do like a large dice of the yellow watermelon and put that in there too. The goat's cheese, toss it all with the extra. Okay, everything is here. Add the blackberries as well. Why not? So blackberries.
I know how to shop.
Yeah, you do. and the only thing I missed was Manchego. And honestly, I would just do that as a cheese course and probably in the beginning. Manchego is pretty salty, and it really isn't a strongly flavored cheese. It makes a good hors d'oeuvre cheese.
A good table cheese like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think I did it.
You just need a couple of bottles of Rioja to knock out those guinea fowl. Not the guinea fowl, the partridge.
The three-quarter partridge.
The three-quarters of a partridge. I'm using three-quarters of my brain to name birds. All right, what you got for me?
There you go.
I hope you shopped as wonderfully well for me as I did for you.
I'm sure I did better.
I'm sure it cost more.
Or not. Oh, well, yeah, you know one of the ingredients on there.
Twine? How expensive was the twine?
The twine was
cheap. Leg of lamb, twine. The twine course. Heirloom tomatoes, French green lentils, garlic, rosemary, thyme, onion, shallots, Provençal, extra virgin olive oil, shrimp heads on, corn, zucchini, wood for the fire, summer truffle, curly endive. All right. This is an easy one because it's the first course is just a sauteed the heads on shrimp and served with the corn, the zucchini, the summer truffle, almost like as a salad, and use sweet shallots to use shallots that you sweated to make that all very sweet first, and then the heads on shrimp served with that on a bed of that. That's an easy one. The heirloom tomatoes I just want to lay out with the onions and the curly endive and the extra virgin olive oil from Provence. And if I had a few oil-cured olives, I can't say that. Mm-hmm. I would sort of dot them on there, but that's a strong, happy side dish for a hot day. The lamb leg, obviously I want to tie it, and I'm going to go hunting for some garlic. And I'm going to use, the garlic, the rosemary, the thyme for the lamb leg. I'm going to pull that apart a bit. I'm hoping it's on the bone, but I want to pull those muscles apart a little bit and get good salt and oil and herbs and chop garlic into all of the parts of that lamb leg. I'm going to start that on a pretty hot fire to get it to sear on the outside. And the twine, and what I'd rather do with the twine is hang it over a fire that I built.
There you go. So I gave you the wood.
Yeah.
Good.
And literally hang that guy from the hoof end.
That would be great.
And let that fire get down to just embers and let it cook for a long time. And get that to somewhere like the medium to medium well range, where you rest it to almost room temperature. And you have the green lentils that you did as a simple garnish with a little bit of garlic. And then you need something to drink. Then you need your Chateauneuf du Pape.
There you go. Seems like a good idea.
Yeah, no question. Well, I think that's all we have time for. I'm Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you'd like to download this episode or any others, please look for our podcasts on the Formula Wolf page on the WYPR website, wypr.org. If you want to email us, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Or if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter @ChefCindyWolf or on Instagram @ChefWolf.
Thanks so much for listening, and have a great Sunday.